Chapter 23. Gray had returned from Cicero in the evening. The sun penetrated Chicago's almost September sky and threw a lovely reflected glow into his suite's covered balcony. Its late afternoon angle dappled his painted and textured concrete deck through the artificial trees and bushes that guarded his balcony's periphery. He took a strong cup of tea outside and nestled into one of the three small but comfortable settees under his tented dais. No better way to enjoy the southern exposure when the sun made its occasional appearance. On the way back from Cicero, he had called ahead. Butler, his apartment's automated control system, had his cuppa waiting for him. Comfortably seated in the crisp air, it was time to seek out this Toby Styler at Miracle Mile Studios. But he needed to decide whether to do so as a successful author shopping his novel for a movie deal, or as a contract Interpol investigator. But first, he had approached no one at CED as a courtesy and should do so sooner versus later. First order of business, then.
Captain Granger, Lois, this is Aubrey Gray. It has been a while.
Gray, so good to hear from you. I'm told you're sniffing around my precinct with your Interpol hat on. I've been awaiting your call.
A momentary silence registered his surprise at her insight.
I have indeed been remiss. This call is me stumbling onto my blade.
You mean falling on your sword? That shtick might charm a cue, Gray. I have it on good authority that you are too precise a word player to commit that sort of verbal stumble unless it's intentional.
Mea culpa, Lois. McHugh enjoys that. I indulge. Things have been moving with rapidity since my return from abroad on Friday. A case that started in Denmark seems to have followed me here, or I have followed it.
He explained both the homicide and smuggling cases to the captain, along with the progress he'd made.
So I believe the shootings that Mac and your new chap are working on may be linked to my Copenhagen homicide. The smuggling affair is still work in progress as well.
Why, thank you for the call, Gray. And so you're aware, I'm doing what I can to understand McHugh's forced leave as well.
Wonderful. Vi ses. That's see you later in Danish, should that amuse you.
Click. With that out of the way, he made a similar call to his Interpol handler, Freya Eklund, and assured her he was liaising with the local police. She seemed more abrupt than usual, but that was not unexpected. After chastising him for not calling sooner, she said she appreciated learning of his progress, or lack thereof.
Get this done, Gray, and next time I'm your first call.
Of course.
Shite. He then arranged an appointment to visit Mr. Styler at Miracle Mile, also in Cicero, less than a mile up South Cicero Avenue from Windy City's lot. He would do so as himself, both as an author and Interpol investigator. If he was fortunate, he'd confuse the man into being truthful with him. The following morning, Gray found Toby Styler at Miracle Mile Productions in Cicero to be a complete surprise. And he could not be more different from his counterpart at Windy City. Styler stood 6'3", taller than Gray by an inch, even taller than that with his hat on. He was at least 50 pounds overweight and a sloppy dresser. The man wore a soiled white fedora that matched his suit coat, even indoors, featuring prominent stains on the front of its brim, no doubt from constant handling by greasy fingers. Even though it was first thing Monday morning, both the slob and his office were a mess. But Gray guessed the man had a system and could locate every scrap of paper or digital storage device, despite the chaos, perhaps because of it. A table fan oscillated at high speed, which fluttered nearby papers. The small and unassuming office reeked of rancid fast food detritus. Reminded Gray of Freya Eklund's beat-up old Volvo's cluttered interior as she prowled Copenhagen's streets in it. With pleasantries out of the way, Stider plopped his general's bottom into a tired old all-wood desk chair Gray feared it might collapse. It didn't. Stider grabbed his hat's brim, swept it off his head, mopped his brow with a coat sleeve rolled up to his mid-forearm, dropped that hat back onto his near-bald head before leaning forward, elbows on his desk, and aimed an intense stare at Gray, who now sat across that chaotic desk from him.
"Let me guess. That sociopathic little shit Bowman is pointing a finger at me for the murders of his own people, right? Little fucker smooth, ain't he? I'll give you this. That sumbitch could talk a nun out of her bloomers as he's on his knees praying right alongside her."
"Why should I believe you and not him, Mr. Stiler?" "You goddamn well shouldn't, sir. Follow your mystery writer's nose, Mr. Gray. I'm a huge fan, by the way. You ever want to get your work into this here business, I'd be honored to work with you. Far as Lance goes, that creep'll do anything for a buck, greedy little shit."
"Are you a homophobe, Mr. Stiler?"
"Hey, I don't give a rat's turd where anybody sticks their wick, son, or who they fall in love with. Ain't the point. Bowman sweet-talked his way into that job so he could milk Windy City dry. Look at the numbers. How's he doing financially? I'm betting his nums are sucking hind tit, am I right?
While he claims his transformation from CG...
blah de blah! Look, Mr. Gray..."
"Just Gray."
"Sure thing. I'm doing the same damn thing over here. But I'm using my noggin. Transition, right? Not an overnight transformation. He's using that cock and bull to squeeze the turnip. He's flipping the switch overnight. Want to guess why? 'Cause he's clamped a goddamn tourniquet on his CG and AI budgets. Done and done. Okay, but where'd all them greenbacks go? He hires two big-named actors, Fonterra and Michaels. And that's it? I'd check his offshore accounts myself. He's funding his early retirement. Are you sponging what I'm spilling here yet, Gray? But hey, don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourself. You're good at that gumshoe shit. I followed you during that Thibodeau crap last summer. Well played, son."
Gray tried to discern whether this Kentucky homeboy facade was genuine. It didn't matter. This big man's words rang true to his gut. And Stiler droned on.
"Pretty smart, right? Kill off his stars now, and he bitches, 'I had this big deal vision, and poor me, some big bad man, probably that hillbilly over at Miracle Mile, kills off my stars. No wonder I failed.' That right there is Kentucky pig shit dressed up to smell like fine wine. Don't believe me, son. Follow the money."
"I will do so. Anything else, Mr. Stiler?"
"Yeah, you've been to his lot, right?"
"Yes, I've been there."
"Notice his security? Little Lance is paranoid. Iron gates, security guards that would put CED's tax squad to shame, 12-foot walls with razor wire, motion sensors, infrared, the works. Place is a goddamn fortress. So riddle me this, Gray. How does a hardware-toting gunman just wander onto that lot, pop six souls, and get away clean? Just saying."
Gray decided he would take Stiler's advice, colorful vernacular notwithstanding. That might even lead his investigation in a new direction.